This is Weekend Edition on WNYC. Good morning. I'm David First with another edition of This Week in Politics. Members of the Electoral College vote on Monday to select the next president of the United States. And ordinarily, this is a barely noticed event. But as with so many things in 2016, this time is different. An effort has been underway to convince electors to break with the state's popular vote and select a candidate other than Donald Trump. And at least for the next few days, the Electoral College has taken center stage.
E-L-E-C-T-O-R-A-L. Electoral College. We've got a tale to tell.
Political scientist Christopher Baylor has written about why the Electoral College exists and joins us now to take a look back at history as we look forward to Monday. Christopher, welcome.
Good to be here.
With Hillary Clinton winning the popular vote by a large margin over Donald Trump, angst surrounding the Electoral College is perhaps at an all-time high. In an article that you wrote for the Washington Post, you argued that the very existence of the Electoral College has to do with a moment just like this.
The Electoral College was not originally designed to rubber stamp the popular vote in each state or give the states a winner-take-all system. One of the reasons it was created was to prevent the rise of demagogues. The founders thought that the demagoguery was one of the key threats to the Republic. When they designed the Constitution, the memories of the Articles of Confederation were fresh in hand. So that was the system of government we had before the Constitution and after the American Revolution, which gave more power to popular majorities and more power to the state governments. The founders viewed the legislatures at the state level as really susceptible to demagoguery and wanted to make sure that that would not be repeated in the new Constitution. They even intended for the national government to be a kind of check and balance on demagoguery in the state level.
You say that the founders were very concerned about this possibility of a demagogue or a bully being elected to the highest office in the land. And in your article, you look to history for examples of presidential behavior that triggered some of the founders' safeguards against demagogues. That brought you to the 17th president, Andrew Johnson. He was impeached by the House. You say in part because of the way he attacked members of Congress with inflammatory language.
Yes, Andrew Johnson is the great exception. Jeffrey Tulis, a political scientist, calls him the great exception to the pattern of 19th century political rhetoric, where 19th century presidents were expected to be sort of arbitrators between Congress and the Constitution. They were not expected to have their own political agenda, let alone turn the public against Congress in favor of their political agenda. So Johnson was president after Lincoln when Reconstruction was starting. That was an effort to remake the Southern states. And Johnson was basically a Southerner. He was not that interested in civil rights. And Congress was interested in remaking the South into more like the North. And Johnson campaigned on a 19-day tour around the states against Congress's plans for Reconstruction, against things like the 14th Amendment, which would have given equal protection to the newly freed slaves. Doing that in and of itself was considered extremely inappropriate. But the way he did it was further inappropriate. He would get heckled by audience members, and he would yell back at them, and he would compare his opponents, Thaddeus Stevens and Charles Sumner, to Judas, and compare himself to Jesus as being a victim of these radical Republicans in Congress. So when he was impeached, one of the articles was about these harangues and inappropriate rhetoric on behalf of the president. Ben Butler, who is a Union military hero, pushed for the insertion of that, saying there was precedent for it, that earlier judges had been impeached for harangues, federal judges.
We don't get into the Electoral College with Andrew Johnson. He became president after Lincoln was assassinated, so he was never elected. Are we going too far to suggest parallels to today by bringing up Johnson?
Well, I do think that it is the same sort of insults that we see towards Elizabeth Warren, Paul Ryan, as well as his competitors for president. I do think that the only precedent I can recall for this kind of behavior is with Andrew Johnson. Whether you want to call it unconstitutional or not, it is a new level of violations of rhetorical norms that we haven't seen since then.
With Andrew Johnson, the way they handled it was through impeachment. Are you suggesting that they could deal with some of these things through the Electoral College?
Yes, I would say that that would be consistent with the original purpose of the Electoral College. Of course, if the Electoral College were to vote against Trump because of this inappropriate behavior, I think it would be shocking to the public who that is by and large forgotten the original purpose of the Electoral College.
If the Electoral College goes through with voting for him on Monday, Donald Trump will become a member of a fairly small club of presidents who won the election but lost the popular vote. We're talking about John Quincy Adams, Rutherford B. Hayes, Benjamin Harrison, and George W. Bush up till now. Are there a couple of stories in there that really show how hard it is to move forward after such a closely contested race?
Yes. Well, one of them would be Rutherford B. Hayes, where there was accusations of vote fraud and vote suppression on both sides in three states. And so three states had competing slates in the Electoral College. And ultimately, that had to be decided by a bipartisan commission in Congress, which told the electors how to vote. Now, after they selected Hayes, Democrats cried foul, and there was some talk of armed insurrection. The sitting president, Ulysses Grant, was prepared for that, however, had made military preparations, and it wound up being a peaceful transition of power despite all of the threats.
Was he able to govern?
Rutherford B. Hayes was a weak president. He had an opposition Congress for the entire time, and he was not reelected. He was a one-term president. So I do think that the manner in which he was elected wound up hurting him quite a bit. With George W. Bush, it came down to less than 1,000 votes in one state, and losing the popular vote really delegitimized him. And I think in the polarized environment that we have today, both political parties are going to attempt to delegitimize the other side using whatever evidence they can. And with Bush, they did it with the popular vote.
Certainly, Donald Trump lost the popular vote by well over 2 million votes, so that's a whole different story.
Of course, Democrats will try to delegitimize him based on that. But if the Electoral College didn't select him, I think that could get in a lot of trouble. When people feel disenfranchised, like Trump's voters surely would, they don't just go away.
Where do you fall on all of this? A lot of people arguing we should do away with the Electoral College. Others saying there's a real important reason we should keep it. Do you come down on either side?
The only justification for the Electoral College is this Republican purpose, which was lost a long time ago. I think that if the Electoral College is never going to question the wishes of the people, then there's no reason to have it around. I think it should be abolished if all it's going to do is to vote for the popular vote winner in the states. Because the way that it's set up with a winner-take-all system, all that does is distort the popular vote. So it's the worst of all possible worlds. We're really, the contemporary Electoral College neither protects the public from demagogues, nor has the democratic legitimacy that we sort of expect of elections these days.
Well, Christopher Baylor, thank you for discussing this worst of all possible worlds with us today. Christopher Baylor's forthcoming book is First to the Party, The Group Origins of Party Transformation. Thanks again.
It was great talking to you.